Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second-guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Everybody, welcome to the What Culture Gaming Podcast. I'm your host, Scott Tilford, joined by Rachel Howie.
Hello, hello.
And Ash Millman.
Hello.
Now, we are back in more ways than one because we've been away from podcasts for like 2 weeks or something. We planned a whole bunch of stuff for the rest of the year, some of the decade list, some of the year stuff, a whole bunch of stuff for next year as well. But for now, we're all alive again. So let's talk about a game about death. How are you guys finding Death Stranding?
Oh my God, Death Stranding. So I've been obsessed with this. Like, I knew I would get like super into it, but I didn't know I'd be this into it. I'm totally obsessed with it since Friday.
Lush. Because obviously I wanted to get you guys in because you two are some of the only people that haven't played some of the other Kojima stuff.
Yes.
And dude is known for being this really over-the-top auteur sort of force in gaming, or as a creative, he's very much got lots of signature elements, let's say, for better or worse. So I just wanted to get you guys in as non-Kojima fans, necessarily. Mm. So in terms of like an opening thing, how have you found going into like a Kojima game? Like, did you have any expectations and what was that like?
I just expected it to be weird. Like, from all of the trailers and stuff that we've been given and the little snippets that we were handed out before the game came out, which I kept up with like most of them. I just expected something strange and I didn't really know what sort of experience I was going to get. So that was half of the reason that I was drawn to it. Because I thought, I haven't played the Kojima games. Like, I didn't play the Metal Gear series, which I know is like blasphemy to you, but
that's fine. Rachel doesn't play Final Fantasy VII.
It's fine.
I'm still alive.
I haven't played much of his other stuff. So, coming into it like as a fresh experience and going, okay, so what is a Kojima game was half of the fun, and that was it. Expect the unexpected, isn't it?
Rachel, you called it deliberately obnoxious obscurity.
So I have a lot of experience in this field, and I know deliberately obnoxious obscurity when I see it because I'm a Kingdom Hearts fan.
Yeah. Oh, that's such a good comparison.
It is the same kind of like, yes, this is weird and wonderful and we know it, and don't worry, it'll all make sense maybe later on. And I knew that's what I was getting in for, so I was I described it to you as a £50 gamble, which was a big deal for me because that's a lot of money these days to just spend on a game that I have no sort of prior attachment to. Kojima was just always this weird guy. But I love weird. And the way that people obviously talk about the Metal Gear series is you can't ignore that amount of people who are that passionate about a series.
According to Scott knows.
I'm literally wearing a Metal Gear shirt right now. Yeah. It's rare as if I'm not mentioning it.
But no, it's fantastic. Really, really impressed with it so far. It's exactly what I thought it would be. Mm. And then some.
Do you think it's weird in terms of like tempering expectations? Because I knew like it would be this kind of like super well thought out, like, you know, conceptually, like Kojima puts a lot of time into like nouns and terminology, and like even in the first couple of hours of Death Stranding, you're hit with like 20 different terms for like this is a beach, this is Kyrelium, like whatever. There's all these different things, and so I kind of knew that going in. But like in terms of his other games, he's got more and more out there. Like that, you guys haven't played Metal Gear 5, but that was such an over the top.
I played the opening sequence with the massive whale, and then was like, that's enough.
So even that, like, there was never any massive whales in the previous games, and he kind of just goes for that.
There's
like
a massive whale in Death Stranding.
He loves whales.
It's got tentacles.
That's the thing. Yeah. There's like giant space and like weird like oil enemies and like all the kind of like, over the top stuff. Is it like, is it easy just accepting that context? Because it's, you just kind of go in and be like, okay, it's a fresh, ridiculous anime type thing.
Yes.
Yeah.
I actually find that this kind of style of stuff is more believable in a weird sort of sense of the way. I'm not one for like apocalypse scenarios, never could get into Fallout. That sort of thing. Apocalypse movies. Mad Max was cool. But I feel like the more unbelievable, the more believable.
Yeah.
Because you can kind of, once you're going with what, it's like in for a penny, in for a pound.
Yeah, just all of a sudden, one day, the world between the living and the dead was bridged, and then all went to hell. People started blowing up when they died, etc. I have never been so quickly sucked and obsessed into a world. in a long time. I think since Sekiro.
Right, yeah.
I think since Sekiro, that was the last game where I was just like, I need to know everything about this world. Mm-hmm. But I feel like even with Death Stranding, maybe even more so.
Well, it's like, because loads of the criticisms are like, oh, it doesn't make sense. It's so like over the top, it's ridiculous.
It does, though.
It does make contextual sense. Yeah, well, no, it is. Yeah. It's like insane. I mean, like you're weaponizing like pee and poop and blood grenades and whatever. But like there's all these like insane elements that like, it's weird because for me, when people say like, oh, it doesn't make sense, I think they mean it obviously doesn't make sense in a realistic context, but that's so not what he's going for.
Yeah.
And for me, like I like how kind of out there it is.
Yeah, I really, to be fair, as much as I'm like, it's over the top, I really, I did really enjoy that it throws you in with all terminology you've got to figure out as you go. I like things that don't hand it to you on a platter, and you've got to like engage with it yourself and see how you feel about it. As much as I'm still not entirely sure on Death Stranding is probably my consensus of it. I don't know.
I think a lot of people
How far have you gotten? Because obviously the lore gets, I feel like the world building gets thrown at you really quickly in the first couple of hours, and then it goes all quiet for a little bit. You deliver some pizzas, and then it comes back like sort of gradually after that. What sort of bit have you got?
Early on in the beginning, like I've only just started like eking my way through it, so I'm not particularly far through, so I'm still taking it slow. I'm still living my life on the outside so I can come back to it and not get overwhelmed and go, right, I'm not doing this anymore.
Because you can spend ages in that opening bit if you want, like there's it'll generate like they call them like standard orders instead of like the story ones, and you can just go around like, you know, doing as many deliveries as you want. And Josh did that for ages. Like, he was messaging me, like, he's, like, 5 hours in, and he's like, mate, I'm never going to leave this area.
That's what I thought. I am one for completionism in games and doing extra things to sort of grind and level up, that sort of thing. So, like, on a little bit of downtime, I thought, I'm going to build some roads.
Yeah.
So I went around sort of borrowing some materials, grinding some materials, stealing from some mules, and built some roads. And then I thought, right, great, what now? I found myself just wishing that I'd spent that hour and a half doing the story.
Did you not love that you've gifted everyone else a whole bunch of roads?
I do actually like that. And the online aspect is weird and wonderful. But then I was kind of like, maybe it is, it's definitely not the gameplay for me that I'm into. It's definitely the world building.
That's fascinating. Let's pick that apart, because I've got a whole point about like gameplay, because it is so weird the way that it plays. Like, you put so much influence or impetus on, like, you know, you're going to use the shoulder buttons to balance yourself, you're going to be stumbling all the time, you can get around it.
Your tweet the day it came out, Ashley Millman's tweet, oh my god.
No, I got all my stuff together, and I don't usually wear a backpack, and I was like, oh, I'll sit with a backpack on, I'm going to put some stuff in it and go right town.
Is this you in real life now?
Yeah, literally.
Right, good. I think you're talking about the game.
Oh, no, literally, I got up, I just finished playing Death Stranding for the day, I was like, oh, I'm going to go out for a bit, put my backpack on to go and get some shopping. Like, I just wanted some supplies. It was Saturday night, so I put it on and went outside. And as soon as I stepped outside, I was like, oh, and like started gripping to backpack straps. I was like, oh no, I'm gonna fall.
Stumbling, balancing yourself.
I usually wear it like quite low down because I'm cool.
Yeah, that's how you do it.
But I was like tied them straight all the way up. I was like walking like upright, like going, left, right, left.
I've literally found myself like carrying more, and then just like every time I'm like carrying something, I'm like, oh, this is just like Death Stranding. And because I love the game, I'm like, oh, it's really cool. I'm like cosplaying as like Sam Reader.
I cannot wait to see the cosplayers with their big heckin' stacks on their back.
One person carrying the rest of their squad for the rest of the night, just in little small bags or boxes. In terms of gameplay stuff, what was the thing you were going to mention about? Like, it's not necessarily the gameplay that's hooked you in.
Yeah, no, sure, for sure. For me, it is the juxtaposition, which is a big word that I like to use to try and sound smart, which is the pairing of two things that you would never think would go well together is juxtaposition. So you have this ludicrous story that is like a mind heck at times, throws all these different terms at you, like treats you, like I said, it's obnoxious. It knows that you don't understand it and it likes it. Mm-hmm. So you have that side of it. And you also have this really simple side, which is the gameplay, which is you're a porter bridges.
Yes.
You take a bunch of stuff on your back, as much as you can carry, and you help people out. Mm-hmm. That's it.
Because like gameplay does boil down to like, you're walking around, you're running around.
Try not to fall over.
Like there's a lot put into that. Ask you how you found
it's
that.
It's Fetch Quest the sim. Like, totally. It's literally Fetch Quest the game, which wouldn't appeal to me at all normally. Like, I definitely, I subscribe to his world building a lot more than the gameplay, but I feel like it's like Rach says, like the comparison between the two, it does work, and it does lend into it.
If you're not a fan, loads of people are hating it. So
it is the most fascinating sort of combination because you can do a little bit of like, oh my god, what is going on here? Like you have this crazy boss fight, and then it's like, oh, but it's okay. We're just gonna go deliver a pizza now. We'll make a road. It'll be lovely.
Some of the stuff with the overarching narrative about like, you're rebuilding America, you're bringing everybody back together, and they really drill that in, especially in the first couple of hours.
Jesus,
like,
they do.
So many characters are just sort of like, come on, Sam, everyone needs to work together again. Like, you know, whatever. And he at the very beginning, his dialogue is literally just like, nah, it's not going to work. Nah, don't be crazy. That's never going to work.
He's a very one-dimensional character.
Yeah. At the beginning.
No, I do find myself liking Sam as a character. I kind of like, he is my ground. I feel like he is me because he's just like, oh, I don't know what the butts is going on here, but I'll just deliver my pizza.
I don't get it. I feel like it doesn't match, like him wanting to like help all these people and do all these deliveries, but also thinking not believing in reconnection.
Well, yeah, we should talk about that because there's a key, because they want you to have that. They want him to have like a starting point and then go out and do everything else. And we're not going to go into spoilers at all, but like, he has an arc, let's say. And but there's a really key scene at the beginning where he's talking to Die Hard Man, and they're talking about the reality of you need to take all these packages out and go find Amelie, who's like, this is just the setup of the game.
So he obviously really loves Amelie, who's like his sister, half sister,
adopted
sister figure, sister.
Someone he cares about, who's like off to the very end of the map on the west hand side. And so it's like, okay, go find her, but also like, you know, put the country back online. And he just keeps saying, nah, America's like, literally his dialogue is, America's dead, no, I don't want to, or whatever. And then Die Hard Man just goes like, oh well, no, we need you to. He pretty much goes, ah, come on. And then like he just goes, oh, okay. Yeah. And it just happens. I don't even think he says okay. I think it just goes to gameplay and you're doing it.
Yeah.
So, and I thought that was a weird transition.
Yeah, certain things are just written to keep the game going along, I guess. Maybe they weren't completely thought out.
And I think the thing that I think Kojima's going for is that idea of just like, well, he knows it's the right thing to do. And there's a lot of commentary in this whole game about roles and responsibilities and like knowing the thing you're supposed to do versus like, you know, more human instincts and whatever.
I don't know. I feel like I'd be more interested in his story if it kind of felt like more of the mule side of it, where he's like delivery dependent. I felt like that was something that was really interesting for these like antagonists and stuff. And like Sam having that kind of drive to him, I think would be an interesting thing. We'll have to see how it plays out.
I mean, like in terms of runtime, I'm about 38 hours in now, and like I'm almost at the end, but I haven't got there yet. And in terms of like, the way that they do the Sam stuff or the overall pacing of the story, I guess it's like a wider comment or a wider sort of problem with open world storytelling. Because I was saying to Rach before we recorded that like, sometimes, I don't know if you guys have had this with certain cutscenes where like, you know, a character will bring in a terminology or they'll start mentioning something that clearly everyone in that room knows about, but I don't as a player. And I always think because it's an open world game that I've just missed something. I'm like, oh, maybe I was supposed to go check in somewhere else. But how have you found that mix of like, the cutscenes are super delivered, here's a lot of terminology, and also super open-ended, go deliver whatever you want.
Like I say, it is very Kingdom Hearts, which historically people always compared to Metal Gear as just being ridiculously complicated for no reason. So I am pleased. I like it.
I think it's, I mean, I'm a big fan too. I think that it is jarring, but like notably jarring. Like he's going for like this weird split personality type feel.
It is split personality because like the cutscenes as well are like so long and involved. And then like you just have a little bit of running around, like at the beginning, definitely long and involved, and then a little bit of running around, and then long and involved, and then loads of wandering around, and then a little bit where you see the like some baby flashbacks and that sort of thing. It's like, oh, cool, thank you.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, but BB is a BB. BB is a bay, B, B,
he's
a,
your baby.
B, A, E, B.
Good.
Yes. But no, I really like the terminology. I really like the world building. I think that's part of the draw of this game. I think if it didn't have that, it'd be a piece of crap, like, is the thing. Like, if it was just go and deliver things and reconnect America without this massive world that you need to unpick and understand as you go, that's where he's managed to, like, put the draw in.
Well, the one thing that we have sort of, like, left out of the gameplay side of it is plotting your route. So, basically, you have these really interesting things in this world, like Timefall. I'm obsessed with Timefall.
Yeah, the rain is time.
Like the first opening cutscene, when you just know that they're trying to avoid it, and you see her hand, and he gets one wee drop on him, and it wrinkles
makes like,
him.
Yeah, he's all
and I'm just like, what is this rain? What's up with it? So, like, finding out about that, and then obviously now you know what it does. It fast forwards stuff. I think that's brilliant.
Yeah.
Because it comes into gameplay where you have like these packages to get to a place. If you don't get them there fast enough, you get caught in the rain. They rust. Mm-hmm. so plotting a course, you have to make sure you don't go through somewhere with rain. Mm-hmm. You have to make sure you don't go through somewhere with BTs. Which obviously that gameplay is linked to the story. So the gameplay isn't just like carry a thing.
I've always been, every time someone says like, oh, it's just carrying something for me to be, I'm just like, well, the witness is just connecting dots. Like, no, there's always more to this.
The witness is connecting dots and it is just carry. It's Amazon Prime Simulator. That's what it is.
No, it's not.
I like it. I'm enjoying it, but it's Amazon Prime Sim 100%.
But you can, like, in the words of Michael Sedgwick, you can reduce anything. Like, it's not, there is like, you're not wrong, but there's also like way more mechanics to getting from A to B in terms of like the different items that they give you and whatever. But that's the thing that's weird, because like the main loop is deliver the thing, take the next thing, go deliver the next thing. How have you found the like deliberate, because they want you to be frustrated and to feel like it's a slog, especially at the beginning. I think it's intentional based on where the narrative goes.
It's fantastic.
Like it?
Oh, it's fantastic. See, going from just walking and tripping up over every single stone,
every little pebble,
to when you first learn how to make a charger and you get a bike. Mm. Oh my God, I've never appreciated a vehicle more in my life.
Yeah, because they tease you with the bike because you see one first before you get to the wind farm, and then like you're like, okay, oh God, I need that, and then it's out of juice. Yeah.
And then, of course, like without obviously ruining it, you get more and more helpful things that help you carry more stuff, and it's just this really satisfying progression where I went from being really frustrated at not being able to just jump down a mountain because I would break literally every bone in my body to now being able to just do stuff like that. Mm-hmm. It's really cool.
I think that's the main hook of the whole thing, is that he wants to reinforce this horrible slog at the beginning, which I will say I didn't feel was that bad. I'm with Rach for the most part.
I feel like my opinion skews more negative than you guys, because I'm quite impatient with games. Mm. I like going to my game, having my, wow, that was a really great experience. I'm full of adrenaline. I had a great time. I killed a load of stuff. I progressed in the story. I learned this, I learned that and the other. Mm-hmm. Like with Red Dead, when it was like, go fishing. For ages, and that was it. I was like, oh, why do I do that?
Maybe it's because this game obviously has quite a long runtime. Mm. So an hour's worth of Death Stranding gameplay compared to an hour's worth of, say, Dark Souls gameplay? Mm-hmm. I don't know, Call of Duty.
Something more immediate, yeah.
Something with a campaign that's a bit shorter.
Life is full of what-ifs. Some awesome. Like, what if AI could fold your laundry? And some, well, less awesome. Like, what if you have unexpected medical costs? UnitedHealthcare can help get you covered with Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans. They supplement your primary plan to help you manage out-of-pocket costs. No deductibles, no enrollment periods, and especially no more what-ifs. Visit uh1.com to find the Health Protector Guard plan for you.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Before we go any further, I want to talk to you about today's sponsor, Masterclass. With the amount of time we spend discussing and analyzing video games on this channel, it's always good to understand exactly how these experiences are put together. And fortunately for me, I can do just that with Masterclass. With Masterclass's streaming service, you can learn from the best to become your best, studying and growing with over 200 plus of the world's leading instructors. For me, I've been having a blast using a class on video game design by The Sims creator Will Wright to find out exactly how game mechanics are designed around player psychology, as well as learning how important playtesting is to shipping the titles that you and I both love. But it hasn't stopped there, as I've also been brushing up on my practical filmmaking skills directly from my favourite movie director, Martin Scorsese, as well as trying to get back in the cooking game with Roy Choi's amazing course on intuitive cooking. Seriously, my kitchen is a mess, but my belly has never been more grateful. For just $10 a month, an annual membership with Masterclass gets you unlimited access to courses on your phone, computer, smart TV, or even via audio-only modes. Even better, every new membership comes with a 30-day money-back guarantee, and 88% of members feel that the service has made a positive impact on their lives. And to put the cherry on top of that cake, right now, What Culture Gaming listeners get an additional 15% off any annual membership at masterclass.com/gaming. That's 15% off at masterclass.com/gaming. What's that? You want it one more time? Well, that's the URL, masterclass.com/gaming. Right, now I'm going to watch Tony Hawk try to teach me how to ollie properly. I'll see you all soon.
Do you think it's maybe just because of the investment?
It's just stretched, isn't it? It's just stretched. Yeah. Like, I enjoy it and I like it. And if I had time to really, like, sink the whole 50 hours in quickly, I think I'd enjoy it a lot more. But I like, when you come home from work and you have, like, 1 or 2 hours with it, and, like, all I've done is, like, build a road or, like, go and, walk a little bit or pick up a parcel, but I haven't actually seen any story that progress. That's the only thing that kind of gets me, but that's my personal preference as a gamer.
The other night, I put it on, I was having a night of Death Stranding, and I only had a couple of hours-ish when it, you know, all told, and I literally spent those 2 hours just on a mountain, just trying to get off a mountain because I couldn't build anything.
Sorry.
No, it's all right.
That would feel like a waste of 2 hours to me.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying.
A little bit. I mean, the thing is, like, it's weird because it does all, like, the thing is, it's like a catch-all criticism bucket because everything goes into, like, well, it's meant to be a slog. You're meant to get America back online.
You can do whatever you want as well. You can choose to do these extra missions. You can choose to go the hard way up that mountain.
I know, and that's the thing. It's like, this one was, like, it was a story mission in terms of the destination. But, yeah, like, did I just pick the wrong route or whatever? Mm. But then, you know, like I said, narratively, like, loads of dialogue reinforces the fact that it is a slog. And I keep calling him Reedus, Sam Bridges.
I keep calling him Norman. It's fine.
Yeah, Big Bad Norman.
He exists in the game at least. With the
AMC thing with Godzilla.
Yes.
And so, you know, he talks a lot about things being a slog, and like he falls over and he's like, oh come on. He's like, eyes up. Like,
he talks to himself.
He talks to himself quite a lot, and they want to reinforce that because they do change his dialogue eventually in terms of things that he says and whatever to reflect his arc and whatever. So it's like stuff like that where I'm like, okay, I get that you've designed this frustrating slog, and I like that in terms of like artistically or whatever. Like, I don't need all my movies to be Michael Bay movies. I don't need my games to all be, you know, Call of Duty or whatever. But I guess that's such a big risk in the current industry. But how much did you guys know about that specific stuff going in? Was it kind of assumed alongside the Kojima thing that it would be kind of like challenging and different? And
I guess so. Like, I guess knowing that it's, again, delivering parcels all the time, like, you know, you're going in for something long. Mm-hmm. I think what you say about it being like not being a Michael Bay game sort of thing is interesting because you are, like, it is right. It feels like gaming is leaning more to the artistic side of delivering something, like where you have long form films and long form games and everything to make you experience a feeling rather than having a big fun shoot 'em up experience, whatever, just entertainment. It's not entertainment. It's posed as something to make you think. And
that can be entertainment.
Well, you know what I mean. It's not as much as it is entertaining as it is thought provoking.
Yeah,
I would
totally
say Death Stranding definitely sits, like, if there's a spectrum, it sits on the thought provoking side more than it does blind entertainment.
Yeah, and he tries to, if that was like a Venn diagram, he tries to walk in between the two sometimes. Yeah. And like the cutscenes are the thought provoking stuff, and then he tries to do a bit of that with the gameplay, and sometimes it overlaps quite a lot.
I think credit must be due to the marketing for the game, because we were looking for anything and everything on this game. There was no playable demos.
I stayed away from most of it. But
And stuff like that. And we were just like, you know, this is going to be... I had faith in it. I was like, the memes from this game are going to be hilarious. And I was right. Mm-hmm. They are pretty good.
Little baby with a little thumb.
Even just Ash saying it's an Amazon simulator.
Totally.
Just,
I stole that from someone else, by the way. It's not my IP.
Exactly. I love that sort of banter, and I love being part of, like, obviously loving the game, but I love, like, making fun of it as well. I knew it would be like that. But yeah, the marketing gave nothing away. And I think that was key here. So that was, like, I knew, like I mentioned before, that it was gamble because it had the potential to be
mental. Going into it, like, because the thing is, like, he's not done something as, like, contemplative. I mean, this is literally, like, the ultimate walking sim. Mm. Like, for as much as Gone Home and Firewatch get labeled as that, like, this is way as mechanics labeled, you know, the revolver on walking.
I do love Benjamin Richardson's quote that Kojima literally took mechanics that we hated, i.e. walking and over encumbrance and side quests and
made it into a game,
yes.
It's weird because I think that's the thing is, like, one of the things I love the most about it is that it takes an open world and makes it a level. Like, so many open world games, it's like, okay, your destination is here, just arbitrarily drive or walk there, and it's boring. Like, that's the stuff that puts me off spending hundreds of hours in Assassin's Creed, but like, all the new Assassin's Creeds. But like, you know, I've got 40 hours in this, and every trip, I can pretty much tell you a story about nearly every trip that I've done.
Exactly. Yeah. I've been documenting my experiences, and it's mental how, like, I could have a completely different journey across that river one day to a different day. It's amazing.
What are some of the biggest, like, things that made you go, oh, come on, if you had anything like that?
I drove my bike right into a BT.
Nice.
Smacked right into it. Sludge everywhere. Oh my god. It was like that. That was like...
Did you escape or did you go into the...
I was fine. I've still never died.
Oh really?
Still never died.
Interesting.
No, that was brilliant. I'll never forget that. That was so funny.
Oh dear God moment.
Just the whale appearing, like the big squid whale thing appearing for the first time. I was like, what the hell? Like, please. Like, because it sucks you back. Like, it took me through a load of rocks and I didn't know where I was. Yeah, I was like, where's my cargo gone?
You think you're dead. And then it gives you, like, another chance.
Okay. Yeah. So I got sucked all the way back. I was like, where the hell's my boxes? I was trying to run towards them and didn't realize that I thought it was just like a big symbol. And I'm like, oh no, there is a giant squid thing chasing me. And I was in a river at the time. So, like, the black goo was in the river as well. Right. So I was trying to, like, wade through the goo in the river. And, like, it was horrible. I got out of it.
Right.
But that was my please let
please off. Please, Lord Codge. Have neither of you guys died yet?
No, I've not died yet.
Oh, you haven't. Okay, I'll not say what happens when you die.
Well, I can guess what happens because we do know that when people die, they explode.
They explode. You guys. Well, you guys will know at this point that
you go into like the seam, don't you?
Yes, you go into the seam, and I keep calling him Reedus, Mr. Sam Reedus. Always comes back because he's a repatriate. He's like this, you know, specific thing that always comes back.
I keep thinking reprobate when they say it.
Not at this point in the story. But yeah, so like the thing with the bodies and death and everything is it creates this big crater in the world, which in the game world does leave a crater for the rest of your save, or at least as far as I can tell. Because the one time I died at the very beginning, it was right next to the incinerator, and it actually takes the building out as well.
Oh,
like,
God.
So it's like Terminator. It's like this big globe taken out of it.
If you spend a while making a base and then die near the base.
Or you die next to it.
Yeah. Wait, can you see people online's craters?
Not their craters, but you could blow up someone else's road or something.
Could you ruin your own game, though, if you died near enough to one of your home
I assume they've had something in place if you try to take out a mission giver or something. Just dead man flying off, I don't think.
Dead man.
Easy way. But we can sort of pivot for the last bit of it in terms of characters and the naming conventions of them and stuff like that.
Oh, no, they're ridiculous. They're ridiculous. They're ridiculous and a little bit game-breaking. Die hard, man. Like, they're big banter. They're very funny. I enjoy them. But they're created for memes. They're not created for the game, they're created for memes.
I think it's so weird because this is someone, Kojima, is someone who's known for making entire casts in games that are all memorable, that people get tattoos of every single character, even NPCs and everything. And so he's put so much thought into each one of them in terms of conceptually what they are, and I'm not spoil any of the characters in terms of why they're called that thing.
I think we've met enough that are ridiculously
you guys haven't so had their, far, all their yeah. backstories yet, but in terms of why they're called that thing, I think he's going for let's label them like cargo, let's call them the most objectifying possible thing, and I think that works in the larger narrative in terms of transporting things.
Die hard, man.
Well, I can tell
Does
you why
he really
he's called
like Die Hard. Like,
no. His whole thing is more related to something more.
Bruce Willis, man.
No, I admit, Dead Man kind of popped Deadman. Me a little bit. Deadman.
Deadman.
Sorry.
I mean, Deadman, no, he is definitely
Deadman. Used to be, what's it where you do autopsy? An autoptist?
Autoptician. I mean, the thing with the theory of a dead man would be a good name. For his chapter. I don't know, but in terms of the naming conventions, I think that, because we had a note down that we were going to talk about the role of women in this game, because I think that, to not take it all preachy and political or whatever, but it's valid, because Kojima has a history of writing women and being super lechy and leery with them. He also writes incredibly powerful women. I'd have to say that one of the most powerful characters in Metal Gear history is the boss. Mm-hmm. The whole reason that entire game's mythos happens is because of one character called the boss and whatever, but in this game, I think the naming conventions favor men anyway. You've got Fragile and Mama, even though Mama has a real name, quote unquote. But where have you guys found, or how have you guys came down on that initially before I go into more
My instant
depth?
Response to having two female characters presented me as Fragile and Mama, when you've got Dead Man, Die Hard Man, Cool Man, Combat Veteran, all this sort of thing, it's like, thanks.
Yeah, thanks again, Kojima.
Thank you.
Yeah, Fragile, I kind of like, I was, initially I was like, Fragile, the woman.
Yeah, I think everybody
but
was.
But then I think she's kind of maybe known by that. In an ironic way, because she's clearly pretty badass.
Yes, they do a lot with her. She's a really good character in terms of an overall character. But she's called Fragile. The reason is because her company's called Fragile. Yeah.
But then the thing is, I'd sort of choose to see it like you would ironically call a big guy tiny.
Right.
Like
okay.
that kind of style. Like, yeah, she's clearly a badass with spiky shoulders and you could teleport and stuff. Mm-hmm. So I think it's an ironic.
That totally works. They do. You guys won't have seen it yet, but they do. They do more story stuff with her, and they flesh out another reason as to why she's called Fragile. Mm-hmm. And they do more with her. I, that's my overall point with this is that something that my wife noticed is just Kojima tends to put women through hell in his games, and I don't know whether that is a reflection on how strong he thinks women are overall, or whether it is this sort of I'm going to beat you down more and more.
It could just be a reflection of society and maybe. All that patriarchy and that sort of thing. I know those are sort of words, but still, you know what I mean. It's a reflection on where we are at the moment, mm-hmm. how things are going to be changed, how things were, how they're going, all that sort of thing. Mm-hmm. Women having a hard time is I understandable mm-hmm. in the way that he processes different societal viewpoints mm-hmm. and that sort of thing. But Mama and Fragile, I was like...
Because go on, Rich.
Are you forgetting that he made the president a woman?
True. Yeah, I mean, they make a point of saying it's the first ever or last ever female president.
Yes.
Who immediately dies, though, sadly, at the very beginning. Yeah.
Of cancer, very, very weak, very frail.
The other one, like, that we get left with is just upgraded from, like, her daughter and is
Rescued. Come across the world well, to rescue me.
Even that is, like, Mario, like, you know, and then, yeah, so that's the thing. There's problems with that. That's my other point with, like, Kojima as an auteur, is that, like, reading into him, I know that he lost his dad when he was 12 years old, and he seems to have this, like, obviously has a very close relationship with his mum, and he has so much stuff in this game about, like, giving life, like the idea of, like, archetypal female roles in, like, human history or whatever, you know, the idea of, like birth and, like, motherhood and what does it mean, and things like that, and, like, I don't think it's necessarily handled very well, although I do stick up, Mama's, like, my favourite character, I think she's great, but, like, yeah, it's just stuff like that that I think it's so on the nose. Like,
yeah, I think it's interesting, and I need to see how it plays out a lot more before I come up with some, like, big feminist dissection of how it all works, some sort of thing. But from what I've seen so far, I haven't seen a lot of it, so that's the truth. Mm-hmm. From what I've heard of the birth and the rebirth and everything and motherhood, I think that's a really interesting topic to approach. Mm-hmm. But again, it just depends how it all plays out.
Because have you had the explanation for what the BBs are yet?
Yeah, the I was going to say the still mothers.
Yeah.
That really, that makes me so sad.
That made my wife just go, like, I'm not. Like, we're still playing through it together, but she was like, that's a really horrible. But I think that plays into where that character, with where Mads Mikkelsen's character goes, or at least what he's meant to represent. But it's things like that, yeah, they speak to this sort of, like, weird, like, roles, like, sort of, like, you know, gender roles or assumed roles.
But then I think he does put roles for all his men as well. I think the way that he treats people is very, like, strangely boxed off anyway. Mm. And obviously that obviously comes with different connotations when you do it to, like, women or other people or something. Mm-hmm. But, like, I don't know. I think his approach to people and the world is his own unique vision. It's very auteur. So the way that it plays out, I'm not going to sit here and, like, harass him for doing it wrong. Mm-hmm. Again, I need to see more of it.
So far, I mean, like, having played all of his stuff, there's nothing as egregiously horrible as, like, the Beauty and the Beast unit in Metal Gear 4, or, like, the way that he shoots Quiet in Metal Gear 5.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. At least, like, compared to Quiet, because I keep calling Fragile
Quiet. I keep calling Fragile Quiet. I don't know why.
At least Fragile, etc., are all very tastefully dressed.
Which for him is a major step up.
Mama works around science and stuff all day, so she's dressed a little bit more minimally, but she's a working girl. She does stuff. Not a working girl. Oh, God.
I know what you mean. But I think, yeah, that, I mean, overall, in terms of the roles that they give those characters, there's way more agency, there's way more for them to do, they have way more importance. Like, yeah, they're not just, hey, look at this hot woman.
Yeah.
Which is something that he used to get so caught up in.
But that's good that it's grown and shown developing that way as well. Mm. Like, I think that even if that's his past, that doesn't mean it's going to be his future, and the way that he perceives things and puts things out and has listened to criticism and processed it differently. I think that's a really good thing.
Yeah, it's just fascinating. I think, like, as we're all kind of, because the all thing, everything that we're doing on Death Stranding at the minute, the videos, the pods and everything, one pod so far, is, you know, is very much in progress. Like, you know, we're all playing through it. None of us have finished it yet, apart from Ben Roy.
So I'm staying away
from that man. Yeah. But when we've all finally got through it, we'll be able to have more holistic opinions on everything. But I just think it's one of the most fascinating games of the year. Like, for better or worse, at least we've got something that is inspiring this much conversation around everything.
Yeah, I'm really, really happy to be part of the conversation.
And
it sounds proper, like, hashtag forever alone. But no, I'm really, really happy to be. It's just a fun thing to discuss, to talk about, like, how mental it is. And
I kind of miss games having this much thought put into them.
Yeah.
Like, so many formulas and so many platforms for content.
I don't know. Pieces of it still grind my gears a bit. I don't know how I feel about it still. Like, I don't know if I'm going to, like, see it through to the end or if I'm going to end up being like, put down the damn cargo.
Yeah, and
I
think there's a totally a distinction between, like, being thankful that this thing exists at all, and then, like, even if it stumbles, like, Sam Porter, Reedus, Bridges, Daryl.
I'm really bad at just completely overlooking the negative, so it really is obviously refreshing to see the other side of it.
Yeah, man, and we'll probably do a follow-up for this.
Yeah, I think it's much better to have an interesting failure. I don't think this is a failure, but it's much better to experiment, have a failure of something that you can talk about and dissect to the high heavens, than have something that's safe and plays by the same rules all the time.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
Totally. But yeah, let us know what you think down in the comments below if you're watching the video version, or come find us on social media if you're listening along on the audio platforms. For now, though, this has been the What Culture Gaming Podcast, and I've been your host, Scott Tilford, joined by Rachel Howie.
I love Death Stranding.
And Nash Millman.
That's not my opinion on it. No, it's okay.
You can totally
This is the end. Goodbye is probably what I'm
going to
go
might with. Return, you might not, but for now, catch you later. Bye.
Thank you. Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house, with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.